Welcome, everyone, to Empathize Others, the podcast. I'm Augie Jones. In this episode, we talk to Mount St. Vincent University grad, Acadia master's grad, but more importantly, a young man from Halifax, Nova Scotia, who is doing some incredible community work in Halifax and in Nova Scotia. So we'll be talking to Derico Simon. Empathize Others, the podcast, another episode with a community builder, a community advocate, someone that volunteers their time a lot initially. And then we, you know, usually the people that I talk to do transition into, you know, paid positions. And so really excited for our guest for this episode. It's Derico Simons from Halifax, my hometown as well. I've seen Derico come up from a little baller, you know, on the outside courts and seeing him play at the college level. And Derico, what you've done since then has been fantastic. So just, you know, welcome to the podcast.
Man, I'm excited. I'm really excited for this conversation and that you've started a podcast. Because I know what you've brought to the community. I know what you've brought to education. So I think these conversations are going to be fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm glad, like, you know, and for me, Derico, your name came up because it comes up a lot for me because I grew up in a household of advocacy and I'm passionate about the community and I know that you are too. And so this podcast, the whole series, everyone that we connect with are people that we feel are doing that community work. And so, you know, you're somebody that you know, you really from many different levels, and we're going to talk about that today, but you have your hands in a lot of different things that have to do with community. But I always want to start at the beginning because I know that my sense of community came from, you know, being a little boy around a table and having parents that were embedded in community. So I just same thing happened for me. I want you to talk about, you know, the community that you grew up in, the community that was your family. And then, you know, when did you realize that, you know, the community piece was important for you?
So really good question. So community I grew up in, so some know it as Bears Westwood. I know it as the Pubs, public housing community, sort of west end of Halifax for folks who may not be familiar with the geography. And, you know, growing up was. You know, it was great. It was great, but it was also difficult. And you know, I recognized early on, you know, the importance of community from my immediate family. And that was my mom, my brothers, and my grandmother. And seeing the dedication that, you know, particularly the women and my family put to make sure that us for me of it was my responsibility to not only give back, but I couldn't disappoint those my mom and then those elders in my immediate family who have given their life for me.
Now that's I think, you know, Derico, you made me think of something. I know both my sisters lived in what we referred to as the Pubs, and I was sitting on my sister's back step once, and there was there's an area which you would know, which everyone's backyard looks into this round area, right? And yep. The kids play there. And I thought, you know, when you have affluence and privilege and you're allowed to fence yourself off, you don't get the beauty of this, right? And the beauty of this was I'm sitting out barbecuing on my sister's back step and my nephews and my son, they're in the back in this circle playing with a group of kids. Right. Because no one was really fenced off. So it's funny on the underbelly of it, which people may say, oh, well, that's the Pubs or, you know, that's Uniac Square or that's Mulgrave Park. You know, there's a beauty to living in a community like that because you're almost forced to live community like because everyone's so close and everyone's so connected. What do you feel about that idea?
Absolutely. So it just made me smile thinking about I know exactly what area you're talking about. And, you know, there's rarely, and well, at least when I was growing up, there were rarely that someone would have a fence in their backyard. It was just open. So when you go out into the back door, you kind of, you're out into the community. And in within, you know, within the pubs and within my community, it's really a mix of different people. There's some folks who are immigrants. There's some folks from different parts of Halifax and then different parts of the world, all in one community. And so my sense of community growing up was meeting and being friends with different people who have immigrated from different parts of the world and from different cultures. And so I was a kid who was exposed to a lot of different folks and a lot of different households. And so my sense of community became broadened really the second that I stepped out of the door, because I was just immersed in it right away. And so the perception from, you know, other people of the of those particular communities, it may be the way that it is because they haven't actually been immersed in that sort of in community. And to me, that's what community is: different people, different cultures, all coming together.
No, you're right on. And I think about even, you know, your tweet game is strong. And I think about, you know, a lot of times you're challenging people to rethink, right?
Yes.
Their perceptions of certain areas and of certain people, because And I like where you're going with this, and we can build on this too, Dorico, because I think that building relationships with people that you didn't think and that are different from you, and you're talking about that growing up with that in the pub, was it actually made you better. It made you grow. It made you stronger. It made you more versatile. And so as you grow up now, let's move to high school, and, you know, because I want to go beyond when you were younger. Now you're a young adult. And so when you're in high school, what was the light or the flame that was lit in you around community from that time point?
So I would say that sports was a big part of community for me. And so especially high school, because high school was really a defining moment of where am I going to take this and what am I going to do? Where do my current interests lie? And I've worked at the St. Andrews Community Center since I was 15. I went there since I was a kid at 5. I volunteered at 12 to 15. I got employed at 15 and I stayed there. And so I was there in high school working in the same community that I grew up. And so my interests were in community. And so really a defining, probably the most defining point in my life was sitting in the guidance counselor's office, Clyde Paris, and he's like, well, what are you interested in? What do you want to do? And it was community. I said, I don't know what I want to do. I'm interested in young people. I'm interested in helping community. And he said, well, Mount St. Vincent University might be the place for you. They have a child and youth study program. I said, okay, well, you need to sign me up right now, because if you don't sign me up, I'm not going to go. And he signed me up. He paid the fee, signed me up, and literally sort of, you know, the saying, the rest is history, because I knew that I wouldn't have went. But it took that moment and that sort of semblance of my interest and community spirit to say, okay, well, I'm interested in helping. I'm interested in youth and I play basketball. This might work.
No, that's a great point. And what I'm seeing as I do these podcasts, some similarities that come out in what were the reasons why and what were the passions and what were these tipping points. And one of the things that keeps coming up, which you just alluded to, was people that support you at vulnerable times, right? Like, so you're about to choose to go to a university and you're saying to your guidance counselor that do it now, really, because if you do it, because if you don't, and so that type of support and what I would call community love, like knowing that someone believes in you and you said he paid for it, he got you there. And then we are going to talk now about your time at Mount St. Vincent. And I know that, you know, not only were you a student and a basketball player, a student athlete, but it transitioned into even more in your connection to Mount St. Vincent. So, Federico, take me through what was the community on that hill off of Bedford Highway? What was the community at that school when you got there as a student? And then as you started to progress, I think you kind of grew beyond basketball, but yet you were still at the Mount. So talk about your connection to the Mount.
Man, so the connection to the Mount for me is really big, because I was in two different worlds. So the world that I was coming from, I was still hanging around with friends who were into some stuff. You know, all of it not the greatest. I was coming from different situations in my home where there was domestic disputes. And then I was going to university. And so I was really towing the line of two completely different worlds that were contrasting with each other. And in my first year of university, I actually didn't speak to anybody. I honestly, there were times where I would sit out in front of classes and pretend I was texting people. Like I just, it wasn't a world that I was foreign to me. And so really the point was that I was scared to become vulnerable because of how I grew up. I would just felt like I had to sort of live in survival mode and protect myself. So I was scared to actually open up and become vulnerable so that I would be able to then accept help that I knew that people would want it to offer to me. And so the Mount was a really interesting time in my life because towing these two worlds, I had to make a decision. And of course, I chose the decision to really fully immerse myself, become vulnerable and open up to the really family that the Mount became to me. The basketball team, Rick Plato, June Lumsden, Mark Forward, all of those folks, Dave Bryan, really took me in, recognized, you know, the potential that they saw in me academically and as an athlete, and sort of honed in on that. But I was scared to become vulnerable. And that was the point that I realized really only like a couple months ago when I was thinking about it. So the Mount community to me at the time was a family to me, and not only to help me as an athlete, but really, really helped me academically because I struggled in my first couple of years. And so moving on from finishing my degree, which was one of the greatest things I've ever done, finishing my degree, the Mount to me still is like, is a family to me. I'm still connected to those folks and still a large part of what I consider a community because of how they helped me, how they cared for me. The school and those people will always have a place in my heart. So I'm attached. And if the Mount needs assistance or if the Mount needs help because they were my community when I needed it, I'm always going to be there.
No, that's proper. And I think that it's, again, you speak of people that supported you and your community, quote unquote, is often this metaphorical community of people that support you. It's not necessarily a physical space, but it's people that you can rely on become your community. And so, but there's a thing about the Mount. And my oldest sister went to the Mount and this would have been probably 20 years before you went, but it always had a reputation of, how can I say this, of community activism, right? And obviously from a more suffrage women's movement point of view, but I think that there was a point when you were there especially that there was this bubbling up of, especially people that were in the education program that were looking for social justice and started to talk about issues around being of color, indigenous, you know, marginalized groups. How did that, as we know, you go from your first year of taking these introductory courses and then you start to narrow into what you really like to do. Talk about that your academic journey leading you towards community study.
Yep. So you just sort of clicked something here for me. So I really, as I progressed throughout my undergraduate study, I really became the person who I was going to be for the rest of my life. I became more conscious in terms of who I am as a Black person, as a Black male, and then sort of where I sit geographically and socially in the world and in Nova Scotia through my undergraduate studies of just thinking about things differently, meeting new people. And so my undergraduate study sort of awoken a bit of a consciousness. And then through the conversations that I was having at the athletic department, we were talking about these things. Mark Forward, for example, we would sit in the office and we would complain to each other on how bad things were and trying to come up with different ideas on how we could shake and how we can move things and really agitate the system that we were kind of in at the moment. So it was a really critical point towards sort of, I would say, my fourth and fifth year being in university that really kind of shaped it for me and moved me a bit more into activism. And so, you know, friends who've known me growing up, I was sort of a, like an activist, but only within the group of friends. Like, whoa, like you shouldn't say that type of thing. Not really outwardly sort of activist yet. Yeah. Because I don't think I, you know, when I think back, I may not have had the education behind it. And so as I move through my fourth and fifth year, I start to kind of really shape things, learn things, and become more educated. So the outward sort of community activism and advocacy started to become born for me.
Yeah, and I love the way you put that, because one of the best things about academics, and we often preach to young people around how important it is, it's exactly what you said. It gives substance to your feelings so that you're able to have some, well, I'm saying this because I studied it, and I'm not just saying it from an emotional point of view when we're talking about people of color and misrepresentation and stereotyping and some of the things that that are done to marginalized communities or communities that need support. You and I know it, and we felt it, and we lived it. That's different. Is can you articulate it, right? And right. So I think that's what you, and that's what, you know, the education part, it gives you that kind of academic confidence to say things at conferences, to write blogs, to do interviews, and really feel confident because what you're saying is grounded in a four-year undergrad and courses that you took. And so really, in a way, I want to thank all the profs that brought me through, because I didn't think about it till you just shared that with me, is it gives you the building blocks, or I wouldn't say ammunition, because I don't want to use a war analogy, but it gives you the confidence to be able to support your community. And go ahead.
Yeah. So absolutely. Like, you know, you mentioned that we sort of lived it. So we kind of know, you know, I know that something isn't right. I know that this person shouldn't have said this. I'm upset, or I might be arguing with one of my friends about something they said, but I then become more well-rounded and being able to better articulate what just happened. And once you're sort of become a bit awake to what is happening and you have the articulation, educational background to actually say it and stand up and base it in research and foundation, you know, you're a bit more equipped to tackle these complex things that are happening within society. Yes. And it's really was about for me is, you know, did I want to be right or did I want to win? And, you know, I could go into any one of us could really, like, we could go into any room and scream and yell and say, well, the injustices, and we're probably right 99% of the time, but do we want to win? And so I started thinking about strategy to actually combat some of these complex systems rather than screaming that was racist and I'm so mad, why would you say that? That's some of the things that I would do at the mountain in my friends group, is just sort of argue with folks about it. But then, you know, I started to actually think about it more, new perspectives, all of that, and become more grounded. And, you know, the strategy in terms of winning, by winning is liberation, really, is liberation. Yeah. for racialized folks.
Well, that's a nice transition, because I now want to move you into still being at the mount. But now you're the Black student support coordinator. And I do know from playing those roles that you're now stepping out of, it's a tough role to play, to be honest, because lots of people would say, oh, they like Augie Jones, they like Derico Simons. But yet in that role now, your role is almost to challenge some of the people you worked with or were connected to you and knew you as a student. But now you've got to support other students and you've got to bring up conversations and push some envelopes that some people that thought that you were cute Derico now don't think so, because you have to advocate for students. So what was it like transitioning and needing to support the Black student population at the Mount as the student coordinator?
So it was difficult, and it was sort of a 360 of kind of coming back. And really the difficulties were that I sat in the same seats that some of these Black students did. I've experienced a lot of the same things that these Black students did. But, you know, now I have an understanding of systems and institutions. And so, you know, it's one of those sort of uphill battle type of conversations where, you know, I can't move and shift this entire system. So what is within my grasp and my reach and my influence to be able to agitate the system a bit here, poke these people over here so that I'm able to provide, you know, some semblance of movement for the Black students to be able to navigate peacefully and respectfully through the institution. And so, you know, the challenge was that I understood how big and how complex the systems and then this institution are, and then trying to navigate the Black students' concerns through union grievances, through professors, and really through that whole kind of university experience. So it was eye-opening, it was challenging, and, you know, there were some really good people, Paula Berry being one of them, who, you know, were in my corner to help support, shape, and move the office. But there were a lot of really, really frustrating points when something that I knew and everybody else in the room knew should be happening. But because of politics and certain things, people would not move on particular issues.
Yeah, and you brought a point up that I think is key, is complex systems. And we often look for, or people will suggest, really shallow, quick Band-Aid type solutions to something that is complex. And when it's complex, it also means that we almost need a community approach, like, because one person can't solve it. And oftentimes they'll say, well, Dorico's a guy, he's at the table, he can solve it, or Augie's at the table, he can solve it. And that's not it. I mean, when we do sit at tables, that's the thing about being a community person. You sit there in the collective. Like, you may not see the hundreds of people behind me, but that's who I'm representing when I'm sitting here, right? And so when you're now, I followed you as you were moving into this space. I'm now seeing you transition from the Mount, and as you are, I'm seeing that you're really starting to become a social media presence in community advocacy. Was this a purposeful move on your behalf to become more, maybe to take another step into the public eye advocating for community?
So it wasn't, like, I've had Twitter for a long time, I've had social media for a long time, but I guess when I started out having these platforms, I never intended it to sort of be a place of advocacy. I just was kind of messing around on it in the beginning. And so as I started to move through my career, move through different levels of understanding, learn more, and see different elders who are still here and folks who have paved way for me, then I started to think, well, you know, I can use this social media for more than what I'm doing here. And so I began to, you know, it was almost sort of by accident, because I would be doing, you know, certain things in the community, and then noticing that social media is a powerful tool and I can reach more people. And so I purposely started molding my social media accounts and shaping them into ways to be able to get people to think differently, advocate for new things, and highlight when or if I can. And so it's now very purposeful, and things that I post or things that I do are now very intentional, because I'm just sort of understanding now the influence of social media and the reach that it has, and the ways that you're able to actually connect with people and shift thinking and perspectives.
Okay, so, and on that note, I think about, you know, since George Floyd and some of the incidences that have really bubbled up around even African Nova Scotians and how they live in this space. I think about Game Changers 902. I think about Trayvon Clayton. I think about Kate McDonald and yourself. And there seemed to be this coming together of young, I would say you guys are youth, but, you know, youth is, doesn't mean you're teenagers, you're youth, but you really combined your forces to create a platform. So this is related to social media. So talk a little bit about Game Changers 902, where the idea came from, and what's its community purpose?
Yeah, so really this you know, myself, Trey and Kate, like we've been kind of formally and informally working together behind the scenes on a lot of different things for a while before Game Changers formally became the name. And, you know, really what happened was we were all in a conference, National Black Canadian Summit in Ottawa. And there was this event called Black Voices on the Hill, where Black people from all across Canada get to sit down in front of the federal minister and talk about different solutions and issues affecting their community. And while they were there, or while we were there, what happened was there was actually a racist incident that happened in Parliament Hill, where one of the security guards were racially profiled a group of folks and referenced them as the dark ones over there need to leave. Which stirred up, an entire frenzy because we were there to actually provide some of our grievances and solutions. And so from there, I really commend Trayvon for this, but Trayvon really kind of stood up and this is when he called out the prime minister. He called out the entire thing that happened very, very bluntly. It led to us having a meeting. We met with Trudeau for about 2 hours, myself, Marcus, a few other people, Trey and Kate. And then from there, we sort of, we were kind of joking, like Marcus James, he said to us, you guys are kind of like game changer. And so like we were just kind of joke behind the scenes and just kind of joke about the name, like, oh, we're game changers. And then like, again, Trey said, well, I'm just going to make a social media account. Let's just make an account. Because at the time, people were sort of wanting to, how can they get a hold of the three of us? And so we made an account and, we started to kind of post some of the activism, some of our thoughts on that account. And then from there, we started a really cool partnership with East Coast Lifestyle and Alex McLean. And things that helped with our social media and things sort of took off from there. Game Changers, the purpose of it. It's really a multifaceted purpose, but really we highlight, we advocate for, African Nova Scotians, Black community, and we push the system bluntly. Bluntly, we push and we agitate those who are, in power. We rattle the system and we really want to rethink, we want to rethink and then reinvest back into the communities that we serve, because we really believe that we need a systemic solution to the systemic problems that have been happening in our communities. There's been a systemic disinvestment into the marginalized or racialized communities. And rather than creating one-off solutions, we're really trying to attack this entire thing and start moving, shifting, and shaking perspectives so that we can actually see long-standing change rather than one-off funded programs. So Game Changers is a lot about activism, a lot about advocacy, and there's a lot of work behind closed doors that happens, of course, that wouldn't make it to social media, but there's a lot of stuff that happens. And it's, we don't get paid. Like, it's all volunteer. Like, none of us are making any money from Game Changers. All of the stuff that we do is really in addition to our full-time jobs or parenting or all of the other things in community. So it's really all about us giving back and honoring those folks who've come before us. And we take it seriously and as our responsibility to stand up for our community.
Now, and I really appreciate the work that you do because, and you and I had some discussions previously around me really saying, for me as an older generation person, I really look back at the younger generation and support the work you guys are doing and honor that, because it's volunteer time, it's complex. And oftentimes when you make those statements, I don't think people think about the wellness piece around the backlash that you get. And I think that's the hidden part is are the DMs and the comments and the things like that that are just off the chain, because they don't, people are, when they're anonymous, they can say very hurtful things. And so, one of the things I do want to get into then, Derico, because I really admire the work you do, and I think about why the commitment to community, now that you're doing it and you're seeing that it has this it's not as fun. Like, it's not fun. People think it's advocacy is fun. It's not fun. So what is your commitment and how do you feel about it now? Like, what do you feel your community role is and what keeps you going on this path?
Well, I take it very seriously because I would not be where I was if it was not for people who have come before me and people who are still fighting. There have been people who have sort of reached down and pulled me up when I've been at some of my lowest points and have gotten me to where I am. I'm where I am because of community. I wouldn't be where I was without community. And, you know, one of the things that I've been saying is that there have been people who have picked up the baton and ran as far and as fast as they can. And, you know, whether their time was up or they're still running with it, I now look and I say, okay, well, how dare I let all of that work that those other people have been doing go in vain? And, you know, so if I'm really going to say and honor somebody resting in peace, then I have to continue to do some of the work that they have been doing while they were still here. And so I look at it as taking it as my moral obligation and responsibility to do whatever I can within my power and capability to ensure that the people around me are doing well and to ensure that this keeps moving. Because we can go back historically and say, well, you know, there for sure were activists, advocates when people were enslaving folks, and people grabbed that baton and they ran with it. And so then other people picked it up and now we're here. And so we are making strides, maybe not as fast as we want to, but we're making strides. And so, you know, the things that keep me going are, you know, understanding that I have no idea who is paying attention. I have no idea who I might be influencing, but knowing that, you know, I'm a young person, but there are other young people who may be looking and may be watching, and that the words, the things that I do are in some way making change. I believe that words are actually physical. And so when I say something, when I say I want to do something, the world is eventually going to get out of my way. If I say, you know, Augie, the justice system needs to change. If I say to people, it needs to change, here's what needs to change. Someone's eventually going to grab onto that and be like, wait a second, he's got something here, and the world's going to start moving. You know, like the cliche of the graveyard is the richest place. Well, that's because there's a lot of ideas and a lot of activism, a lot of thoughts that those folks never had a chance to say. And so I believe that words are extremely powerful. And so it keeps me going just to know that, you know, I desperately want to make as big of a difference as I can while I am here. And that's just it. It keeps me going to think about the other people who were before me and the people who have legitimately sacrificed their lives. So there's no quitting. Like, there is no quitting. I have to keep going.
Yeah. No, that's I feel that come from you almost on a daily basis. And I really do appreciate, you know, the work that you do. I want to bring you into two situations as we kind of look to wrap it up and come into the last little bit. So the NASCAD position, and you know, I know in 2020 they hired you as the opportunity and belonging person, and I thought it was a nice fit because I knew you weren't afraid of the fight, and I knew that you weren't afraid of complexities. But you were going into a situation where a popular president who was pushing for change was high profile, in a high profile nature, was let go. And so I was really, you know, I didn't hear a lot from you personally to talk about what it was like, but you were walking into a different situation than the Mount. Let's put it that way. It's a brand new situation. Mm-hmm. There was some volatility. How did your past learnings about community help you in that situation? And what was your goal when you went to NASCAD?
Yeah. So, you know, I looked at that situation as you can either run to it or you can run from it. And, you know, knowing that this was a particular position of influence, knowing my sort of community background, and then also knowing that the strategy behind this of, again, do you want to be right or do you want to win here? And winning here is making a difference, shifting and changing some of the culture at NASCAD for some of the NASCAD students. And so my mindset going in here is that I know what I'm getting myself into, and I'm okay with it and I'm not afraid of it. But how, when I get there, am I able to make a difference and then influence and maybe get some people thinking, geez, you know, we might not have been making the best decisions possible here. Geez, well, maybe we actually can do some of this for some of the students. And so it was a really, it was an interesting, certainly an interesting time to walk into. But, you know, you can either run away from it or you can run to it. And often, you know, when we are making change and we want to make change, we got to run right into the fire. And you might have to be the person to sacrifice yourself to try and put that fire out. You don't always put it out, but there, you know, you're jumping into it with the intentions of putting the fire out and shifting and changing a bit of the culture for the betterment of everybody. And sometimes, you know, that's what a leader may have to do. You may have to be the first person to jump in, clear the way for some other people so that they have a better path forward. And that's what some of it was at NASCAD. It was challenging.
No, it makes certainly. Sense. No, it makes sense, Rodrigo, because I just, as you're talking, I was thinking about game changer. Like, it's that, right? Like, if you're changing a game, you know, it even in the pure sense of what that means, there's going to be people that don't want the game changed, right? So exactly. there's tension. When you put those, yeah, exactly. The people that are winning the game don't want change. The people that are losing exactly. The game, they're like, the Monopoly game's not fun anymore, you know? And we talk light of it, but I think about there's this tension and advocacy between the status quo and what people may call progression. But it's really the status quo are those people that the present situation is working for. And the mm-hmm. progressive people are the people that the present situation is not working for. And so that tension always exists between people that go, they're just crying or just stop it, man, like, because you're comfortable. But there's people legitimately, a whole diverse group of populations who aren't comfortable. And so there is that link. And I just see that in the game changer name that you guys came up with. I'm going to end off with this. And I know this is brand new and I'm really happy to say that, you know, you and I are probably going to be doing some work together, but now you have a new job. And so, you know, the recently announced Equity and Anti-Racism Initiatives Office by the Nova mm-hmm. Scotia government has made a great decision in hiring Dorico Simons as the policy analyst. And so I was really happy to hear that, you know, joining the public service, which is going through a lot of change. And it looks like there seems to be some authenticity around, you know, making some systemic change. And so how do you feel as you start this new role?
You know, I feel really good. I'm trying not to use the word hopeful because hopeful to me is passive. So I don't want to say I'm hopeful for change. I mean, you're either going to do it or you're not. And so I'm going in this with a mindset of I have a lot to learn, certainly within the public, within working for the province. I've worked for a municipal government, but I haven't worked for a provincial. And so, you know, I know what I know, but I'm going in here open-minded to learning as much information as I can first and then figuring out the things that need to be changed. You know, there's a really good team that I'm going to be working with. And, you know, I have a lot of respect and admiration for Deputy Catherine Berliner, who's kind of, you know, helped me get to where I am now with this this position. And so, you know, this you really have to, you know, I have to, and people really have to stop and think that we have an office, a provincial office of equity and anti-racism initiatives. We have to really take stock in terms of what that means and what that can mean. The potential is really infinite on how we can actually make a difference for our most marginalized and our racialized communities within the province. We can be an example for how things should look. And so I'm extremely excited to join the team and then, you know, to bring some of the skills and some of, you know, my community experiences to this role, because I'm still, you know, I see myself as still very much like a frontline person. Like I'm still very much kind of on the ground and in the communities. And so I try to keep my ear to what is happening. So I think it's exciting. And the sphere of influence that the province has, this can be really impactful. It's going to be, let's just say that it's going to be impactful.
No, well, I was really, you know, happy to hear that news. And I just want to end off by saying, Dorico, listen, brother, I love the work you do. It's, you know, I've seen you grow up from a little scrappy, you know, 11, 12 year old baller who, you know, and then to see you, you know, take the position that you've taken, which is not an easy position. I think sometimes people don't realize in the dark hours, some of the things that go through your mind when you have to advocate on behalf of other people. And let's just say a lot of times you're taking the punches that are meant for community, but because you put your neck out, you're taking the punches. And so I really want to say I'm proud of you. Keep doing what you're doing. I know going forward, you know, you and I have a lot of work to do together, which I'm really excited about. And I'm so happy to have had you on the podcast. There's a lot that I've learned from listening to you. I know that when our audience, you know, is taking this in and digesting it, I always want the audience to get some really inside views on why people do the work they do and what's the real, mm-hmm. the real side of it. And you really filled that in today. So I want to thank you for that and give you all the energy I can as an older cat, you know, to say, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And I'm always here to support.
Thank you. I just want to send, you know, sincere thank you for the work that you have been doing, the work you're continuing to do. And now this, I think that these conversations, you know, this is really living out empathize others. And this is going to give people an opportunity to see some of the people who are doing the work, but then also learn from you with your questioning and this podcast. So I'm very happy to have this conversation and also, you know, that we're probably going to be working together on a couple of things. So excited yes. for that. Yeah. And one of my favorite quotes I'll say is that the tallest mountains have the best views. And so, you know, we're still climbing, but you know, if you've ever hiked or mountain climbed, when you get to the top and you're looking down at what you just done, it's like, wow. So
it's a beautiful thing. Do,
but the view will be amazing. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of Empathize Others, the podcast. We hope you truly enjoyed the show. Now, if you're enjoying the podcast series as a whole, as much as we're enjoying making it, please let us know by subscribing and leaving us a 5-star rating. When you subscribe, you'll know right away when our new episodes are released. Did you know you can also watch the video version of this episode on our own YouTube channel? Just search YouTube for Empathize Others and it will bring you to all of our episodes. We hope to see you there too. If you'd like to learn more about Empathize Others overall, please visit our website at www.empathizeothers.com. Follow us on Twitter at empathizeothers or link us on Instagram at empathize_others. Thanks again for listening to this episode. I'm Augie Jones.